last time we talked, we skipped follow-up at the beginning of the episode, thinking that we did not have any follow-up. But after editing episodes 12, 13, and 14, I do have a little bit of follow-up from each of those.
Okay.
So from episode 12, when we were talking about your newlywed days in primarily Mesa, Arizona, we talked a little bit again about your honeymoon, during which time you stayed at the Hetty Hotel at Homer Spit. Or you stayed there, or you were supposed to stay there?
We were supposed to stay at the Homer Spit Hotel and Spa, but it was taken away by the earthquake. So we found this, what we thought was a hotel, turned out to be a Victorian house with limited bath facilities where we stayed.
And that was the Hetty Hotel?
Correct.
Okay. Well, so I did a little bit of internet sleuthing on the Hetty Hotel, and I added this as a link in the show notes on the podcast page, so you can look at it there. But a March 23rd, 2017 article, Historic Hotel Looks Ahead with New Face Name. It is now called the, after being the Hetty Hotel, it was called the Heritage Hotel. And it has yet another new name now, which I'm not seeing at a glance. But it's an interesting article. It talks about how they had to redo a bunch of it, and because the giant wood beams that were the walls were rotting and stuff, and they had to basically take the walls away and put them back. And while the walls were away, it looked like a dollhouse or something, because all the interior stuff was still there, but the exterior walls, which apparently is not an unusual thing to do in Alaska because of the way some of that stuff was built and the materials that are there, I guess. But anyway, it's a short article.
Wouldn't you know that I would stay in a historic, I didn't realize it was an historic hotel that would be reincarnated in the 2020 time period.
Well, and so here we are. You can read the rest if you want to know about the details of the renovation and stuff, but here's the paragraphs I quoted in the notes. Although hotel ownership has passed from family to corporate and back since its inception, the name has changed only twice, from the Hetty Hotel to the Heritage Hotel, then most recently to King's Landing. Alborn, the new owner, explained that the new moniker ties in with his other regal fantasy-themed businesses, Excalibur Construction, and his fantasy gaming business, the Dragon's Den.
That is hysterical.
It's been purchased.
There was no fantasy about that hotel when we stayed in it.
That's
funny.
We
were like, really?
So it's been purchased by a D&D fanatic. And then it goes on to say, named after the original proprietors, Al and Esther Hetty, the historic Hetty Hotel was built in 1947 of three-sided spruce logs, while later additions consisted of cedar log siding over frame construction.
Well, that's why cedar rots. Yeah.
Then goes on to talk more about it. But so I thought that was interesting and
very
fun.
Very interesting. Yep.
And then from episode 13, when we were talking about your time in Novato and San Francisco, we referred to one of your favorite haunts, the Tadich Grill, which had a going out of business bankruptcy scare during the pandemic, but according to the San Francisco Chronicle,
do you mean during the recession?
I meant during the pandemic. What did I say?
Oh, okay. You said pandemic, but I was like, that was just a couple of years ago.
Yeah. No, it almost, oh, okay. Basically, it had a bankruptcy scare during the pandemic. It had been doing fine until then. Tally and I visited the Tadich Grill. It's probably been 10 years or more since we were there. But the last time we were in San Francisco, we got to have a drink there. And anyway, it nearly went out of business during the pandemic, but some restaurant investment fund swooped in and helped them connect the dots to make it through.
Well, that makes me happy.
And it's the, I don't know how to pronounce this, Buich, B-U-I-C-H family that owns the classic seafood restaurant, recently learned about the financial support. So anyway.
Wow. Awesome.
Yeah.
I was depressed when you told me that Tadish had closed. It was such a cool old place.
Yeah, it's got that awesome traditional style neon sign. Okay. And then last time when we went on our marathon discussion of dates in history and where we were, when we were at the very beginning, we were talking about the Bay of Pigs situation, and you mentioned a movie that you had seen that you liked about Bay of Pigs. Is that the movie called 13 Days with Kevin Costner?
Yes.
Okay. Good to know. I'll put a note.
I didn't necessarily like it, but I thought it was a good representation of the times.
So, okay. Well, I will make note of that and link to it in the notes for that episode. And that, I think, catches us up on all the follow-up I had, unless you thought of anything in the meantime.
I did not. So I think we're good to proceed.
Right on. Well, what's that I hear in the distance? Are those jingling bells and sleigh sleds sleighing?
I think they may. And I just saw on the television that NORAD, North American Defense Command, there in Colorado Springs, thought they saw something, an unidentified object coming across the sky.
From the North Pole, perhaps?
Perhaps.
Should we talk about Christmas?
I think we should. It's getting to be that time of year. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Well, living in Florida and Texas, that's a little bit of a stretch, but yes, it is.
Yes, you're right.
My neighbor does have a nice Christmas light display, and there's a few packages in my living room. So yes,
that'll work. It's the spirit anyway. Yeah.
Well, I will let you take the lead on this, if that's okay. Do you want to?
Okay. Well, I wrote down a couple of things. We'll just whip through here, and then you can ask some questions along the way if you think of something. I was just going to give you my first probably 19 years of where I was at Christmas, and if there was anything particular I remembered. So I was born in Auburn, Alabama in 1944. The war was still going on. So my dad was on the Aleutian chain in Alaska, defending the western coast of the United States. So my mom was living with her sister Mary and her mother, and all of the children involved in my grandmother and Aunt Mary's house in Auburn, Alabama. So I had my first Christmas in Auburn. I remember nothing about it. My dad came back after the war ended in the summer of 45, and we moved to Alexandria, Louisiana, where I must have had my second Christmas, which I don't remember either. After that, for my third Christmas, we moved to Mitchell Field on Long Island, New York, which I don't remember either. The only thing I remember about Mitchell Field, which I think I indicated in a previous podcast, was that I got some horrid injections for asthma, which they thought would help at the time, but didn't. After that, we moved to Maxwell.
That doesn't sound like a Christmas present.
No, thank you. After that, we moved to Maxwell Air Force Base, where I had my fourth Christmas. And I think that fourth Christmas, we drove over to Fonsdale in Uniontown and Auburn as well, and not necessarily on Christmas Day, but to celebrate the holidays with my grandmothers and great aunts and uncles in Fonsdale and Uniontown. And then my grandmother and my aunts and uncles and cousins in Auburn.
So my it still strikes me as, I'm still surprised. I should not be surprised by this, but I'm still surprised when I hear stories like that and envision you as a 4 or 5 year old child traipsing around Alabama the way we traipsed around Alabama as kids.
Exactly.
I always have it in my head that you didn't start going to Alabama until you were in your 20s or something, which is obviously wrong. But so it's really amazing to think of you. Was it the same house that Mary was in? Was that?
Yep.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously I don't have the Fonsdale house memories. The house that burned down, I presume. Is that the house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you have the Fairhope, you know?
Well, yeah. And just the fact that you were, you know, driving those roads, being in those places, yep, just is, so wonderful and weird.
Yep. And I will tell you, since you know Aunt Mary and my grandmother's house, that they always had a huge tree in the corner and then a roaring fireplace going in the fireplace and kids in and out, you know, lots of kids. Well, Babe and Suzelle's six kids, Aunt Mary and Uncle Jimmy's four kids, and the five of us. It was crazy. Crazy good times. So then we moved to Falls Church, where I had my Falls Church, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C., where I had my fifth and sixth Christmases. And I remember those. We had a living room with a fireplace and a tree in it. It was a very small house. I can't remember a Christmas that was a bummer, except maybe those Christmases that your dad was in Vietnam. But I was still with family, you know, and still had things to be thankful for. So we moved back.
There's an interesting parallel I didn't realize in our lives, you and me, which is I was in Burke for my fifth and sixth Christmases. And so you were, I don't know, in the same, like right close there.
I was, right?
That's
so funny. I started kindergarten and went to first grade there, just like you.
That's interesting. Okay. Well,
that's a little bizarre, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So after Falls Church, we went back to Montgomery to Maxwell Air Force Base when I was seven. Those 2 years that we spent at Maxwell Air Force Base, Granddad was in two, like, postgraduate. One was Command and Staff School. The first one, I can't remember the name of that one. But anyway, it was, you know, it was more education. And so Maxwell Air Force Base at seven, I was in second grade there, and we were just there for a year. And from there, we went to Norway, where I spent my 9th, 10th, 11th, and maybe my 12th birthday, or Christmas, I'm sorry. I have incredible memories of Norwegian Christmases, kind of like Missoula Christmases. Well, for one thing, we got a month off of school. You know, we got off like a week before Christmas and we're off all through the holiday and then off the first week in January. So, you know, we went skiing. We had lots of Norwegian friends over. We had lots of eating, lots of parents drinking, I guess, and a huge Christmas tree, one in the library and one in the living room, and just a jolly old time. So, yeah, lots of skiing. And then we moved to Grandview, where I had my Grandview, Missouri, where I had my 12th, 13th, and 14th Christmases. We also had a big tree in the living room, fireplace. Sometimes it was cold enough that we could go down on that little pond that I told you about behind the house and go ice skating. We rarely had snow at Christmas, but I think we might have once or twice, more like flurries than actual snow.
Did Grandma have a consistent Christmas feast spread that she made, or what was the and did that change in Norway, and what were the meals like over the years?
Well, you know, traditionally we had a country smoked ham if we were close enough to get one, kind of like Doremus, a huge stuffed turkey, pretty much like what we have, biscuits, sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, a green vegetable of some sort, gravy, lots of pies for dessert, pretty much, you know, what we have this day. And not much. If we had been living off the local economy in Norway, we probably would have had fish for Christmas. But since Granddad went to Germany to the commissary once a month, he was able to get all of the, you know, American stuff. I do remember that one of the traditional Norwegian delicacies, I think it's called lutefisk,
yeah,
which is a fish that they prepare and then bury in the ground to rot. And then they take it out the next year and you know, it's completely decomposed and squishy is the only way I can think to describe it, and very odorous, to put on crackers or homemade bread that they thought was just divine.
Did you ever taste it?
Yeah, I did. You know what? It was not, it was really strong, you know, for an 8-year-old kid, it was like super strong, but your granddad and I loved to eat sardines together. So it was not, you know,
that's what, so it was kind of like sardines on steroids or something like
if, yeah, like, exactly.
If you like sardines, you can probably handle
sardines with blue cheese mold, you know, something like that. I mean, it was a little,
talking.
Yeah, exactly. Granddad and I used to eat the saltine cracker, blue cheese and a sardine on top. Yum.
I don't think I've ever tried that combination. I like all those ingredients, though.
That's, yeah, everyone else in the family thought it was gross. So I'm not sure whether I liked. I'm not sure whether I liked it because I liked it, or whether I liked it because Granddad and I were the only ones who liked it together.
I had similar feelings about that at the, when I would be at the at Fairhope with Granddad, and he and I would eat sardines. That's interesting.
Yeah, I was like, I'm the only ones that like what Granddad likes, right? Mm-hmm. This is special. So anyway.
Well, then Billy came along and he and Granddad ate deviled ham together, but I could never bring myself to do that. So it's, I guess we each,
know,
had, our,
me either. It's like,
we each had our own ingredient
own
that
delicacy
we shared with Granddad.
And with Laura, let me guess, it was a chocolate candy bar or something. Oh, what was Twix was what he loved, remember? Twix. Yeah, they would always stop on the way down to the beach at that little country store and get a Twix.
I remember it.
Yeah. And
ice cold Dr. Pepper.
Exactly. So, so in Grandview, it was, we were all, I guess Ben was, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 or something like that. I was 14 in that last year, and Bruce was away at college and came back. And Samba was a senior in high school, and I may have told you this story before, but Grandmom thought that we just didn't have as much fun as we used to because there were no toys, right? So she went out and got these ping pong ball guns. It was a small gun, and you put the ping pong ball in the hole, and to make the ping pong ball accelerate, you popped it together.
I remember Richard bought, probably in a case of sentiment, bought those for us in Missoula, and we had a whole new round of that when we were there.
Anyway, Mom was like, that was probably the biggest mistake I ever made. The house in Grandview was a ranch style house, and you walked into the living room, you could see the dining room, the kitchen was kind of to the back, and then there was a long, maybe 40, 45 foot long hall, two bedrooms on each side, and then the bathroom at the far back. And we would get into these wild chases up and down that hall, shooting each other with those ping pong balls. And if you had on shorts or your underwear, which is probably what the boys had on at Christmas, it stung, right? When it hit your leg. And so, yeah, it was wild and crazy. And then at some point, Bruce or Sambo would flip on the attic fan and throw something up there, and it would suck it up into the attic. And yeah, it was especially underwear. They like to tackle each other, take their underwear off, and then throw it up in the attic fan, which sucked it up, which made Granddad furious because he'd have to go up in the attic and retrieve it. So yeah, we had some wild and fun times at Christmas when we were all growing up.
I'm glad you mentioned the ping pong guns. I'd forgotten about those. And, you know, the Nerf guns have taken over to such a degree that kids these days don't understand how fun a ping pong gun can be.
Exactly. Oh, man, those things were crazy. I don't even know if they make them anymore, but
I'm already at Amazon.
it was such basic mechanics, right? Air and a ball, right? And pressure. Anyway, so when I was 14, we moved to McLean, Virginia, where we had my 15th and 16th birthdays. And by that time, the whole dimension had changed because Bruce and Sambo were gone. I can't remember where Bruce was, but he may have been in Italy. Sambo was at the Air Force Academy. And so it was just Ben and Richard and me. So it was way quieter with us. But we still had fun. And it just wasn't as crazy as five kids running around. And, you know, we were all growing up. So that was kind of sad, actually. But just as, you know, we had just as much food and just as much going on. That was the year, I think, that Granddad taught Richard how to play cribbage. And they played cribbage for hours on end. And then Scrabble was a big thing, I remember, when we were in McLean. So, and then from there, we moved to Alaska, where I had one Christmas up there. My senior year, we had Christmas up there. And it, we, again, it was just Ben and Richard and me and mom and dad. And we had a really, and we had a cool house in Alaska, and it lent itself. It was a traditional type, like the ones at Hamilton, lent itself well, and Fort Bliss lent itself well to Christmas decorating. And again, we did a lot of skiing and ice skating and bowling. I think I mentioned to you before, they had a bunch of bowling alleys in the basements of some of those big buildings on Elmendorf Air Force Base, and swimming.
I had forgotten. It's interesting. I don't think of you as bowling at all. Did you bowl a lot growing up, or was it just kind of?
No, but we did in Alaska because it was there and it was free, you know?
And it was freezing.
And it was freezing. Yeah. When it was, this is funny. When it, I think I told you, when it was too cold to ski or ice skate, we went to the indoor swimming pool or the bowling alley. When it was too cold to ski or ice skate, we went swimming. But it was indoors. Yeah. They had two or three big pools on the base, and I think three bowling alleys too. And they were in the basements of these monstrous buildings.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good Christmas in Alaska. And then I went away to college. And when I left to go to the University of Missouri, my granddad said, you know, if you want to go that far away, you won't be able to come home for Christmas because it's too expensive to fly for that short period of time. And I was like, oh, no big deal, you know. And so I ended up going to the Bright's house for Christmas. And I was so miserable. I missed everybody in the family so much. It was just not the same. It reminded me of when you first got to England. You were like, I don't know if I can do this. This is just not, you know, of course, at the end, you said everybody should do this. I wish I could stay or something.
Well, that's interesting. That Christmas when I was over there was, I think, my first Christmas away from the family. Can't think of a time growing up that I had a Christmas with anyone else but being at home. We were in Nuremberg, Germany. And it's interesting because the run-up to Christmas on that trip was awesome. Like we would, every town in Germany has a Christmas fair in their town square.
Oh, yeah.
And so we didn't know that going in. And it was just, so it was kind of magical. And they would have that, whatever that hot wine they serve is. Glühwein, I think they call it.
Glühwein.
G-L-U-H-W-I-N-E. And you know, and all kinds of like, you know, stalls with toys and clothing and all kinds of Christmassy stuff for sale. And that was delightful. And then we got up on Christmas Day, or no, at about noon on Christmas Eve, we were in Nuremberg and the Christmas fair shut up. They took those stalls down faster than you can blink. And suddenly the entire town was empty. And we had rooms in this kind of not really official hostel, so which is to say not a good hostel. Hadn't really prepared, hadn't bought food or anything. And we did go out to the church service that was in the cathedral, and that was enjoyable. Boring, but also beautiful and enjoyable. It was, and then Christmas Day was, and it was interesting because we none of us were exchanging gifts or anything, and it was because we were traveling and all that. But Joel was with us, who's Jewish. Yes. And he was chipper as could be on Christmas Day. We were all depressed and missing our family. And he was trying, and Joel, who is usually the depressed one in our group,
was exactly just
chipper as could be, trying to keep our spirits up. And he had snuck off one of the days before and bought these ridiculous leather string necklaces with cube like wooden cubes that spelled out our names on them and gave those to each of us as Christmas presents, which was just, it was so weird. It was so like amazing to think of Joel thinking of us missing Christmas.
Exactly.
It was like Joel, I can't ever remember him doing anything like that in any other context, knowing him. Not that he wasn't a good friend or anything, but it just was, that was not his personality, which made it that much better even.
Exactly.
That was the highlight of a really dark, dim, literally dark day outside and dark emotional Christmas. I have a picture of me returning to the hostel in my, you know, my Northern European winter college student outfit, holding a cucumber and a roll, which was the only food we could find at what was available and open that day. So,
well, I will add something to that, in that I will tell you, from living in Norway, and at the time, I mean, I was, 8 years old, stuff in the United States was not open at Christmas either. You know, we didn't have mini marts or stuff like that back then. But you could find something and you were prepared. But I'm telling you what, Europe shuts down for holidays. You know, that our first holiday in Norway, and that would be Easter and Christmas, mostly. Our driver, Andre, would tell us, you need to buy groceries. You need to do this. The stores will be closed for 2 weeks. He wasn't kidding. They shut down, you know. They all go to their little ski lodges or go whatever.
Yeah, when they disappear over there, they disappear. It's like, you're right.
They go to their ski lodges
and stuff, because the towns are, because we were, and we didn't, we, it kind of like upended a whole week of the trip. Not in a bad way necessarily, but it was just weird, because like we went, after being in Nuremberg, we were in Vienna and had an amazing New Year's Eve there. But the rest of the time we were there, all the museums were closed. There was nothing going on. We had some restaurants and stuff were open a little bit. It's a bigger city than Nuremberg, so there's a little bit more going on, but none of the cultural stuff was available.
Yeah.
And it was worth it to be there for New Year's Eve celebration.
I bet that was exciting.
It was. I've never been around fireworks in the street like that. And it was a crazy dancing party in the streets.
That square in Vienna.
Yeah.
Which I've only seen, you know, in movies and stuff, but it just looks, well, and Bruce has told me about it, how spectacular it is.
For the rest of my trip over there, on my hiking boots I was wearing that night, I had these burns from the fireworks that they would set
fireworks.
Off. They would set off on the ground and they would go off in all different directions and burn your shoes. or not burn, but sear. They wouldn't catch on fire or anything, but it would just leave a sear mark, you know, is where it skidded across. Anyway, so back to where were we before we went down that rabbit hole?
We were in Alaska and then in Europe.
Oh no, it's your first Christmas away from home in Missouri.
In Missouri, yeah. So that was not fun, but I made it through, you know, and then the next Christmas, I guess where was I? You know what? I was in Alaska the next Christmas, because I took off that next semester. No, I didn't. I don't know where. Maybe I was with the Brights that second Christmas too, but it wasn't quite so much of a shock not to be with my family.
When you say with you were with the Brights, Dad was there, right? Like you weren't like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I was. Yeah.
Of course.
That was why I was there. Yeah.
Uh huh.
They're not prone to such jovial times and ridiculous escapades as the Westbrooks were, are, whatever. Anyway, and then in August, when I was 19, believe it or not. Your dad and I got married, and then we started off on our own journey. So we had, actually, we went to El Paso that first Christmas in Mesa, of course, because Mom and Dad and Richard and Ben were there, and had a great time. And I think Bruce and I don't think Sambo was there. Maybe he was. Actually, I think all five of us were there, and had a great time there. You
was
know,
Bruce,
went to Juarez.
Was Bruce married to Kelly at that point?
I don't think so. I don't think he was married yet. So we had a great time, like the whole family reunion, and, you know, went to Juarez two or three times. Just had a good time. I think we may have even gone up to Ruidoso skiing, but anyway. And then, you know, the next year, your dad was in Vietnam. And what did I do? I think I put up a little Christmas tree in my apartment in Mesa. I remember that. Surely I went to El Paso. I don't
have.
Were
you with Sam Arcade in Phoenix?
Yes, actually, that is where I was. Thank you. Yeah, had Christmas out at their house at the Williams Air Force Base, and then your dad came back the next year, and we were in San Francisco for 3 years. San Francisco is magical at Christmas time, if you go to the city, because it's kind of like New York, you know. They do it up big, everything downtown and the square and, you know, the Embarcadero, everything is decorated and just festive, people in good moods, people out enjoying themselves.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, good stuff. And then where did we go from there? I will tell you one thing. We skipped Missoula. Because that was after your dad died. I just want to look back and say that for some strange reason, and I guess it's no surprise, it seems like the most fun and memorable Christmases were the ones with the whole family, no surprise there, but we're in northern climates, you know, Alaska, Montana, Norway. I'm not sure why, but I think you get, you know, when it's cold outside and you come in and you're bundled up and it's a whole different thing.
That's what Christmas is made for. It's the idea.
Exactly.
It's what you aspire to, even if you're not there. And it's so it's,
exactly.
I think it's, I agree.
So, you know, down here they decorate palm trees. That just doesn't do it for me.
I agree.
You know, well, anyway, but that's just the way it is. So
yeah, it was when we were, I think it was actually the Christmas before the pandemic, or maybe a year before the Christmas of, I think it was 2019. 18? Or no, Christmas of 2019.
It was right before the pandemic, yeah.
I think that's when Talia and I were in Taos, and that was the first time I'd been in a snowy Christmas for a long time. It was super magical it takes it to a different level.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's cold. You're walking down the sidewalk. Everything's lit up. People they've got Christmas music going. You go in.
Fireplace is going.
The fireplace is going. You get a great drink. It warms you up. Yeah, it's all good. So anyway, but one of the most memorable Christmases, which we were talking about earlier, was when your dad came back from Vietnam. It was 1974. It was the year Billy was born. And he came back for two or three weeks at Christmas and had never seen Billy. So that was their first encounter. And you and him and me, went out on the, took the tractor. You know, your dad loved drive a tractor because he drove one for Mr. Botts, all working for Mr. Botts all through high school in Missouri. Got the tractor going, put a big flatbed trailer.
I remember that flatbed wagon thing they had that we used for all kinds of things.
Hooked it up, and you know, you and he and I went out to find a Christmas tree in 500 acres of Fairhope, and we went down the. We had those cedar trees all down the fence lines everywhere. We went down and we kept stopping. No, that one's not big enough. No, that one's too big. No, that one's... Anyway, you pointed out one that we thought was just perfect. And your dad said, do you think that's tall enough, Ben? And you said, yeah, I think so, Dad. I think it's perfect. And so we got back to the house only to find out that it was about 9 feet too tall. Your dad kept cutting the bottom off, remember?
I do. And you're leaving out the part about when he went to cut it and he lined up the wagon perfectly for the tree to fall on. And for some reason, the tree fell the opposite way over the other fence line. And so the tree had to be wrestled across the fence and onto the wagon.
Yeah, I was trying to forget that part. That's funny. Yeah. Anyway, that was definitely a memorable Christmas. And we put it up at...
Even after being cut down multiple times, it was still a giant tree because those 16-foot ceilings at Fairhope, it was...
We had to get that 12-foot ladder to get the decorations up on the top. Yeah, that's a tree. Anyway, we put it in that bay window there in the,
that was in the family room. Yeah.
It was the perfect Christmas room. Yeah. That was a fun Christmas.
And yeah, I remember that getting the tree. I probably could dredge something up. I don't have many memories of like Christmas Day. From photos I've seen, like I know it happened.
yeah, me too.
But I don't remember the dinner or the opening gifts or anything, but it's...
I think we had the dinner in the breakfast room because it was so cold in the dining room.
Oh, you know, okay. Yeah, that
little,
makes sense.
That little breakfast room where we used to eat. And Lou cooked turkey.
Dressing. Yes. And we would put like 12 people in there, it seems like. And it was going back to when I went back to it as an adult, it was like, how did we ever fit all those people in this room? But
exactly. You know, that's funny you would say that because I was worrying today about they delivered the crib this morning, where we were going to put Ben, baby Ben. And I went back to old times thinking of, well, like the house at Falls Church, you know, it had two bedrooms and there were five of us living in that house. Bruce and Sambo shared a room, and then Mom and Dad had a big bedroom, and I was in a day bed in their bedroom, and Richard was 9 months old and he was in a crib, and we all used the same bathroom and thought nothing of it, right? Like Aunt Mary's. Yeah. So I was like, why am I worrying about him not having a place to about him not having his own separate room? Poor thing. Anyway, so yeah, that's funny. When we went to see my grandmother in Fosdale for Christmas or any time, they had two or three of those kind of old fashioned rollaway beds that you fold up, you know, and then they snap together like they used to use in hotels. And they would roll those things out into the living room at bedtime and would pop them open. And that's where we slept. It was no big deal, you know, it was all an adventure. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the first Christmases that I remember are the Burke Christmases, which I remember you telling stories of us growing up after Dad had died about how much he loved to go to Toys R Us and just wanted to buy one of everything that he had had as a kid. Did. And then all the new stuff also, and that he was just obsessed with. And I, there's two distinct Burke Christmas memories I have. One being that bicycle, that black, it was like adorned to look like a motorcycle, but it was like a big boy bicycle compared to the yellow and maroon and yellow learning bicycle with the solid rubber tires. And it was like pretty small. I had graduated from that without even knowing it really. Cause I wasn't part of what was so magic about it was I wasn't expecting or asking for a bike. And then to come down the hallway and that Burke, the mid-level living room area there, and that bicycle, which at the time was tricked out with like it had a number on like on the handlebars
as if it was
a racing bike, and had all these like plastic, like something that looked like a gasoline, like where you'd put gasoline in a motorcycle, and you know, the flaps on the tires. It was all completely tricked out, and I loved that bike in Burke and took it to Missoula and also loved it in Missoula. But by the time we got to Missoula and I was, you know, checking out other people's bikes, I realized that my bike wasn't as cool as I thought it was when I was a couple of years younger. But And this is, I believe, the first time I can remember doing this. And this is something I do just all the time now, which is, you know, modify things to my liking.
You took all the labels off.
I took the number off. I realized that I could unscrew that plastic gas tank thing, and it was just a regular bike underneath. And I could take the whatever they're called, the things that, what are the things I just said it, that protect the tires from throwing mud
the flaps.
Took all that stuff off, and it was, and I was left with this black awesome BMX looking bike that it wasn't a brand that I know of. So by this time there were like branded BMX bikes, and it was a pretty popular sport in Missoula. And I can remember other kids like eyeing my bike and asking to ride it, because it was like this mysterious bike. And that might have been the first time I got to feel cool too.
Nameless bike. Did I tell you where your dad and I got that bike?
I presumed it was Toys R Us, but no, you did not tell me.
Heck no. We had no money. It was, anybody in the military will tell you that Washington, D.C. is the worst place to get stationed, because housing is so expensive. Everything's expensive. And basically we were living hand to mouth paycheck, right? And your dad wanted to get you a bicycle, and they were so expensive. And so we saw in the newspaper that the local cops were having their annual auction of stuff, stolen stuff that had been returned, right? And so we went to the auction, and your dad got that bike, and I'm not sure how we kept you out of the garage. Well, I guess it was just freezing cold is the reason. We worked on that bike. We painted it black. We did all that stuff. It was completely trashed when we bought it. So anyway,
well, that was amazing.
That was a mom and dad personalized.
I put that bike through hell, particularly in Missoula. That was my mode of transportation. It was, I don't ever remember like having to get the tires fixed, or I'm sure it did, but
I don't either.
Ever remember it breaking. I remember that was the one and only bike, even including my red line and stuff, where I learned how to do a wheelie and like ride the wheelie down the block, you know, like
And it was a sturdy bike. You know what they always say, that they don't make them like they used to.
Yeah, true. And so, I know it was a great bike, and I don't know if it didn't make it to El Paso, if I outgrew it or what happened, or I know that I had a 10 speed and then got the red line, which is another Christmas story I'll tell in a little bit. But anyway, I can't remember the demise of that black bike, but I'm presuming it got left in Missoula, and I hope some kid's still riding it there.
Yeah, I was thinking Billy learned how to ride on it, didn't he? You taught him how to ride his bicycle on that alley in Missoula.
I don't remember that, but I believe you.
He remembers. We had started teaching him how to ride at the beach, and then he still wasn't really good at it. Well, he fell a couple of times on the oyster shell roads, and that's enough to make you never want to ride again. But when we got up to Missoula, it must have been your bike, Ben, because we didn't have another bike. You taught him how in the back.
Does make sense.
As long as Kingston was not out there.
Well, that does make sense, because I had gotten that 10 speed, what were those things called from Sears? They had a they had a great name. But that yellow Sears 10 speed that I got, that I was so enthused about, that so I could ride up Patty Canyon with Steve and stuff like that. That eventually got stolen out in front of the tennis club in El Paso. But anyway, so that makes sense that I would have handed the black bike down to Billy when I got that 10 speed. Going back to the, and then the, I think it must have been the next year in Burke, Dad's last Christmas, after he'd been traveling the world, New Zealand, Thailand, Hong Kong, etc.
Yep. With the Secretary of the Air Force.
He was back at Burke for Christmas and had brought, and there was a Christmas present, which I did not connect to his travels, under the tree. And it was super heavy to me as a 5-year-old or whatever I was. And at the time, because of my friend, Bobby Bettenberg, I was obsessed for some reason, I cannot explain with, and I cannot explain why he had this or why I was obsessed with it, but he had some little kids weight set, like gym weights, like exercise weights.
Yeah.
And I was, I don't know why I was obsessed with that, but I was convinced that the heavy box was
weights.
A weight set. And I remember expressing it to you too, and being excited about it. And like, I knew that I knew what that was. And then opening it up on Christmas.
And it was a chess set.
And it was a gorgeous, beautiful chess set that I have to this day. A little bit worse for wear, but only because it was loved so much. I will say that I cannot lie.
It was not what you wanted.
I cannot lie. There was a tiny bit of disappointment, which I quickly got over because I had been playing chess. Dad had taught me to play chess in front of the fireplace there in Burke. And, and so it was a very special gift, which I don't think I ever actually got to play chess on it with Dad, but very special gift. And I'm so glad that I have it. But at the time, I really wished it was a... some weights that I could throw around.
That's funny.
Anyway, and that was our last, and I guess we probably had three Christmases in Burke, but I either don't remember the first one or I don't have a story about it.
A couple more of my most favorite Christmases were after your dad died, and we were kind of, you know, we ended up in Missoula. We're in Missoula in front of that monstrous fireplace with the tree, the big tree there. And Richard, I don't know if you remember, but you know, when he gets tickled, he cannot control his laugh. Mm-hmm. And I just remember a couple of those Christmases, him just being hysterical about, I don't know what, but maybe stuff somebody opened or games we were playing or something, but how jovial and what a great time he was having. So,
yeah, I have such great memories of those years at Christmas with like you said, the giant, that was one of the rare days we actually spent time in the living room. And so it made it feel more special because of that. And the fireplace was so awesome there.
Instead of the teeny tiny TV room.
Uh-huh. It's funny to think back on why we did that. But and I think part of it was we were all old enough. I mean, like Laura was it seemed like, I don't know. It was like things, you know, the action was really going. Like I was
in
fourth, fifth, sixth grade.
Yeah.
And Laura was no longer a baby. And so
was two or three. Yeah.
We all had
Billy was
kind of
kindergarten. Yeah.
Interesting levels of stuff going on. And then also just the getting ski equipment and like the, you know, just,
going to say we got equipment we could go do something with, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And making blueberry muffins in the morning and all the, those were good ones.
Blueberry muffins and hot chocolate around the fireplace opening gifts.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Then, I don't know if you remember our first, it must've been our first Christmas in El Paso. Was that the year when it snowed like 8 inches?
Yeah.
And that was the year I got my red line. That all happened in that quick of a time.
Yeah.
Cause I remember being in seventh grade. There was that, of course we got to El Paso 6 weeks into the school year. So it was practically Christmas when we got there, it seems like, I can't believe all this happened between arriving there. I arrived there, discovered, you know, via Lee Artalejo, the BMX store down there.
The BMX store.
Behind Como's. I wish I could remember that guy's name. Do you remember the kind of hippie Mexican father figure guy that ran it?
Absolutely.
And his name was like, I want to say it was Leo, but I think I'm just thinking of that because I associated it with Lee Artalejo, but it was something like that. And he was an awesome, you know, accommodating, friendly dude. He was
super excited about what he did.
Yeah. And
he loved bicycles and he loved the kids.
And I loved the store immediately, and I loved buying those magazines and looking at them, which is where this is the first time I can remember getting or finding something like that. And I remember that to this day I can see that red line 2-page, you know, full width ad that I just was taken away with and just obsessed over and asked for Christmas, seventh grade. And I'm sure it happened way more than I remember, but I don't remember many times like really blowing your stack, irritating you. But I remember in the days.
Well, I don't remember many either. So
in the days leading up to Christmas in El Paso at Richard and Jan's house that year, I was so amped up. I was carrying that magazine around, looking at that ad just over and over, reading all the little bullet points on it, and just obsessed, like completely lost my mind, obsessed with Christmas that year, and asking you, do you think I'm going to get the red line? Do you think I'm going to get the red line? Do you think I'm going to get the red line? Do you think I'm going to get the red line? And I can remember standing at that island with the magazine in my hand in the kitchen in El Paso, you busily, you know, making pies or cooking something. And do you think I'm going to get the red line? Do you think I'm going to get the red line? And you turned and you said, I don't know if you're going to get that red line, but if you're going to get that red line, it's probably in Richard's bathroom closet right now. Why don't you go look? and I that, you know, because I didn't usually blow your stack and I had successfully done it, and B, because it put this immediate feel of guilt completely down on me. I was cowed briefly. But my enthusiasm overcame me, and I, despite your warnings that I was going to ruin Christmas for myself, I snuck back there and went into Richard, stuck. And, you know, you had to go, like, I didn't spend that much time in Richard's bedroom, much less in his bathroom, much less in his closet in his bathroom. So, and sure enough, there was the red line, and I snuck back there several more times, ruining Christmas more with each try, and I didn't ever get caught sneaking back there. Or maybe you rolled your eyes and said, okay, there goes ruining Christmas.
No, I know.
But I managed to not get caught. And anyway, and then we woke up the next morning, and there was my red line that you had figured out a way to get me, and went and looked out the front door to go ride my red line, and what had been dry,
it was snowing.
What had been dry land the day before was covered in 8 inches of snow. I went out and tried to ride my red line on Rim Road with my Missoula confidence of, okay, this is not a hurdle, I can do this. But I realized that when we were in Missoula, I never rode my bike in the winter because we had other things to do in the winter. And
exactly,
riding your bike in 8 inches of fresh snow is no fun and
not smart.
And it was, yeah. So that was my little punishment from above for ruining my Christmas, yeah. I guess.
Go ahead.
That bike was my lifeline until I got my car, in terms of I got all over El Paso on that bike and loved that bike. And it's on that list of things where if I could still have it somewhere hanging, like I will never tell him this, and maybe he'll hear this if he listens to this podcast one day. But even though I try to act cool about it, I am jealous in a tiny way of Brian McMath having his high school BMX bike in semi-mint condition hanging in his garage.
Oh, wow. So you want me to tell you about the year I ruined my Christmas, and then we'll close this up with a happier note?
That sounds good.
Yeah. So it was in Kansas City. I guess I was 11 or 12 years old, and there was nothing in particular that I wanted, but I remember seeing in the Sears catalog this pair of Japanese pajamas, like I can remember what they look like. Turquoise pants with a floral trim on the bottom, about 2 inches, pedal pusher length, kimono style jacket with those little knotted buttons that they do, Japanese style knotted buttons with the floral print on the top and then trimmed in the turquoise like the pants. And yeah, I did want it. And I kept looking at it. And I kept, back in the day when we were growing up, Sears catalog, which was always called the wish book, the Christmas wish book, came out in October, and you went through that. And by the, you know, but before Christmas, those pages were so raggedy and torn and dog-eared and, you know, of what everybody wanted, that it was crazy. So yeah, I wanted those pajamas. And which I guess explains my craziness with wanting to travel the world. Those Japanese pajamas. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, everybody went to do something and I was left at home alone. And I opened every box under the tree to me. Very, which may explain some of my obsession with packaging perfectly and so I split the tape. I got all those things over. You would never have known they would have been open. I should have been a dang detective or a spy or something. Anyway, and they were there. I even tried them on. Oh my God, I wanted them. I wanted them that moment, and it was like days from Christmas. And so I put everything back together and put the bows back on again, got them all back under the tree just the way they were. And no one ever knew except me. And when I got ready to open all the Christmas presents on Christmas morning, I had to be an actress, which I'm not a very good one, but nobody ever knew. I don't think I ever told grandma and granddad. Anyway, yeah, bummer.
Oh goodness.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna say
there must be something about that age, 12 or 13.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you told me that story, because I'm gonna say you make me feel less devious than you were. So
not a chance. that and eating granddad's after 8 minutes and denying it. No, I didn't have one. No, we didn't have any. and you guys did the exact same things. He would put those in the freezer and you'd go, if we just take just one and like rearrange the little envelopes, he'll never know.
I could mow through those frozen after 8 minutes. That was, I couldn't stop. Once I started eating those.
God, they still make those.
Oh yeah.
I looked it up the other night. I was thinking about them.
I absolutely believe it. I was about to speculate on whether they would fill the romantic version of their taste in my head. The reason I asked that, I think, I don't know, and I don't even know who makes after 8 months. Like, is it, are they like a
Nestle's makes them now, but they were made in London at the time.
Okay, that makes sense. It's English, because it's like I had a Kit Kat.
But you know what, Nestle's, I think, is a Swiss company. Bill and I looked it up one night. They're
giant. They're like they're so big.
They're the largest retail. Their annual numbers are the largest retail in the world. They own so much other stuff. I had no idea. But anyway, yeah, Dad used to get them when he'd go to London and bring them back when we lived in Norway. And I'll tell you the difference. You know, I like York peppermint patties. Get that out in a minute. And they have the same taste, flavor, and mint wise, but it's the thinness. No,
it's the texture.
The layer.
It's the whole texture.
Yeah, in the after eights. So.
And I'll bet they're still as good. I don't know if my tastes have changed or if the chocolate has gotten worse, the milk chocolate, but I had a Kit Kat bar recently and it just didn't taste the same that I remembered it.
But do you know what? After eights are dark chocolate.
I know. Well, that's, yeah. And so, yeah, I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's both. My tastes have changed.
No, I don't like milk chocolate anymore either. It almost grosses me out now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well,
strange, strange little good memories.
Yes, indeed. Let's see, where were we? I think we can.
We were rolling it up, I think.
We were wrapping it up, yes. All right. Well, those were some great Christmas memories. Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho.
Jingle, jingle, jingle.
Speaking of Christmas, it still annoys me that I left that leather row of sleigh bells that I used to have on the door at the 400 Hague house. You know, it was about 3 feet long. And it had those big bells on.
Oh, I remember.
So that you could hear somebody coming in the door. Yeah. It was left there when we sold the house and moved.
By accident, obviously.
By accident. Yeah, of course. By accident. Yeah.